Welcome to episode 256 of The Lab. I'm Brad Barton.
I'm Phil Barton.
There will be some links on the show page today where you can find more information, and you can find that by visiting thelabwithbrad.com.
You sound like you're in a hurry.
What's up? I'm changing up the rhythm just for the heck of it.
Heck.
We got a lot to cover. It's my birthday next week.
Happy birthday.
So no episode. Mm-hmm. We'll be back on April 2nd. Okay. So there, I said that. All very quick.
Do we mean that, or is that... I mean, can we extend April Fool's into the 2nd? All right. Don't comment. Okay.
I wonder what the very first food was.
Who's eating?
That's good. Also, I wonder that. You know, there's two things you do with food. One is you get the material you use to build your body. Mm-hmm. And the other is to get the energy you use to build your body.
Oh.
And by that definition, plants eat sunlight and water and CO2.
Yeah.
I need to cover some physics again.
Okay.
Right? We're talking about photons. Mm-hmm. Like a piece of matter can absorb a photon and cause the electron to move outward,
mm-hmm.
away from its nucleus.
Okay.
If it moves back down towards its nucleus, that's when it releases a photon. It's a matter of changing the potential energy.
Neat. Okay.
A twist on this is that some atoms want more electrons more than other atoms do.
Greedy.
Some atoms are just like, I don't even like this thing.
Take it.
This means, depending upon what chemical elements you have in your compound, the bond can be stronger or weaker, or at a higher or lower potential energy.
Okay.
Which gives you a way to store energy in molecules.
Oh, you can purposely find things that are easy to break apart.
Yes.
Oh.
And then you can access said energy later. Now, our bodies, to do this in long term, use things like sugar and fat.
I've got a lot of that.
You're
I'm
so sweet.
Storing energy. I'm the model of efficiency. I
don't know. For a short-term, immediate use, we have adenosine triphosphate, which we talked a lot about on Monday. So it's Monday, the 16th of March, 2020. I bring that up because in a week from right now, when we're recording, it's my birthday.
Happy birthday to you.
Oops, sorry, thank you for singing. We haven't had to invoke that rule in a while. Yeah. I want to bring it up. Hopefully, I'll remember to mention that there will be no episode next week because, hey, it's my birthday. Mm. Taking the week off. Next one will come at you on April 2nd.
Yeah.
But in case I don't remember, here's this section that I'll hopefully be able to just chop out entirely.
I forgot, but here it is. Yeah. I said congratulations. It seemed random, right?
Okay.
But really, congratulations.
Surviving the wars and the plagues and so forth.
it used to be if I looked for the show on Google, it was there, but I had to dig a little bit.
Right.
Of late, if I smash it all together and leave off the .com, first dang hit. It's right there. And not only that, below, it's like there's a podcast section. And it starts listing some of your episodes. I'm very excited about the whole thing. People can find us.
That's awesome. Now that you mention it, I'd like to give a shout out to Runcible Spooner and Terrapin Computing. Thanks, guys, for the likes and retweets of late. That's very nice.
Hey, yeah. You guys kick ass.
I have a Dorg report, but I don't know if we have time. Whatever. I can cut it out. I can talk.
Don't have time. Right, the sun's still up.
They can mate make a baby.
Okay.
Then one of them is pregnant. Unfortunately, I didn't get around to the part where they actually give birth yet.
Oh, God. The gestation.
This is an infinite gestation period.
It just lasts. It's, yeah.
I found a bug slowed me down, a weird one. Mm-hmm. Apparently, if a Dorg stands right next to the wall and the other Dorg is within about 20 pixels with too narrow a focus from their eye spot, the other Dorg is invisible.
Oh, well. I mean, okay.
Took me a while to figure out what was going on. if the spread's too narrow and it hits the wall,
okay.
There's some rounding that happens and it ends up being a line.
Oh, okay.
And did anything intersect this this polygon? No, it's a line.
Okay.
So it has to be a minimum spread of 8.1712336.
I good worked you know it out. That number. Okay.
To seven decimal places.
Wow. Okay.
I had a little nerd fit. You know, within the nearest tenths of a millionth.
Ah, thorough. It makes yes. your code better.
Mm. Oh, sure. That's what we call it, better.
Well.
Anyway, today we're talking about the cells.
Yeah.
And their energy systems and... I don't really know what's going to be included entirely in this show until I'm going to finish the research, but I did look up adenosine triphosphate, ATP.
Yeah, that's definitely in there.
I was curious about that stuff. It turns out that, as far as we can tell, every single form of life on Earth uses this stuff.
This is, yeah, okay. Earth yeah, signature.
You see my little caveat there, because there's bound to be some critter somewhere.
As far as we can tell. Yeah. Except for these guys. Dang it.
Right. It's a nifty little molecule. It's not the only energy system that our cells and our bodies have, but it's a handy way to pass energy around.
Mm-hmm.
It's you got your ribose, right?
Okay.
A 5 carbon long sugar.
Yay.
And on the first carbon is a nuclear base, adenine. Right?
Okay, okay.
Yeah, it's sitting there. And on the 5th carbon is a triphosphate.
Yeah, yay for triphosphates.
Triphosphate. Let's talk about phosphates in general, and we'll start with a phosphoric acid.
That sounds dangerous.
All right, so we have a phosphorus atom in the middle.
Okay.
It has an atomic number of 15, meaning it has 15 protons, and all else being equal, 15 electrons.
Okay.
But it's also pretty darn reactive. In fact, if it's pure and sitting around at room temperature, regular air pressure here at sea level, it burns.
It burns. All
yes.
by its little self.
It glows in the dark, burning very slowly, but it also has a penchant for just sort of igniting entirely.
Holy crap. Yeah, that's why it's in match heads, I assume.
It is much happier to be hanging out with a few oxygens. 4 is seems to be its favorite number. But then the, some of those are ionic, so they end up with some hydrogens, protonated, as they call it.
Illuminated? Okay.
Do you know what a tetrahedron is?
Vaguely. I think vaguely. I had to make okay. one in shop once.
It's a pyramid with a 3-sided base.
Okay.
And every single side of it is an equilateral triangle, all of exactly the same size. It's okay. a D4, okay. if you're that nerdy. That's what you get. You get the phosphorus in the middle and the oxygens arranged around it like the corners of a tetrahedron.
Oh.
One of those oxygens is double bonded to the phosphorus, I think. At least considering the ether bond we were looking at the other day. The diagram?
Ether bond.
Let's not tell that story. The other are hydroxyl groups. Okay. Now, why is this an acid? Because acids just want to give up a proton. That's just what they want to do. Give up an H sometime in their life.
Okay.
And once they've done that, you actually get 3 O's hanging out there. They're all minuses, so there's a net charge on this molecule of -3.
Okay.
Good times.
Yeah.
This, instead of bonding to a hydrogen, it can also bond to a carbon, which can be one of several carbons in a hydrocarbon chain.
Okay.
But there's another trick they do. Phosphates, they can bond to each other. I did not know this. They will share oxygens.
Oh.
Yes. And then they form these strange 3-dimensional shapes that are, I can't see the diagram. The only example I know of for certain was a tetraphosphate, 4 phosphoruses. And with usually 4 oxygens, you'd expect that to be 16 oxygens, but it's actually only 10 because 6 of them are shared.
Hey, okay.
There's apparently a lot of energy in these bonds because hanging out on the 5th carbon, on that 5 carbon long sugar, is this triphosphate.
Okay.
And they're all bound together in ways that the diagram would have told me.
I see my future. I see myself looking at that.
Yeah, it's all part of the fun. What happens is that one or more of the phosphates will be peeled off of the molecule. And when it's peeled off, it doesn't just come off. It's not just click. It springs apart vigorously.
Okay, violent.
And that's going to leave behind either adenosine diphosphate or adenosine monophosphate, both of which will get recycled. A couple more phosphate groups smacked back on and turned back into adenosine triphosphate. Okay. The factoid I have for you, which I got from Wikipedia, so it's free and worth what we paid for it.
Yeah. I do pay that. Anyways, whatever.
You recycle your own body weight of ATP every single day.
Ooh, wow. That's a lot of math somebody did to figure that
out. So how does this stuff actually work? For example, it does so much that I really, an exhaustive list would be the rest of the show.
Several shows, possibly.
But let's talk about muscles. Okay. All right. In your muscles, you have fibers. You have actin and myosin fibers.
I've heard of myosin. Okay.
M-Y-S-O-I-N. How would you pronounce it? No, wait. M-Y-O-S-I-N. Never mind. I'm going to cut out this part where I misspell things.
Dude, that's fine. But I've heard of myosin. That's all I'm saying.
None of this works without calcium ions in there. You get a nerve impulse. It opens up those ion channels. Calcium ions flood inside. And that makes the actin fibers sticky.
Well, that makes calcium more important than I thought it was to muscles.
Oh, it's darned important. The myosin head will have an ATP on it, there right? And it will break that apart. And then it'll...
Energy.
It sort of folds over. And it's leaving behind an ADP, an adenosine diphosphate, and one little phosphorus ion.
Okay.
It bonds to actin while it's in what they call the cocked shape.
Cocked?
Yes.
Cocked. Like
cocked, C-O-T, as in a gun.
Oh,
it's,
okay.
Yeah, good it's name. Bent.
Get bent. Wait.
Then some other little protein comes sliding along and knocks off that ion.
Okay.
And it bonds even tighter to the actin fiber and straightens up. Okay. This is the power stroke. Your actin fiber has now been pulled on. It's in a state they call rigor.
So dead.
No. It's flexed.
Rigor. Okay. Sorry, I was thinking of rigor mortis.
It's funny you should mention that. There's a twist to this little story. This actually happens over and over and over again. But right now, at the state of rigor, it's stuck to the actin. Even if the calcium ions all go away, it's still stuck to the actin, and the actin is stuck in the state of rigor. It takes another ATP to bond to the myosin for it to be able to let go.
Oh.
And this is something that happens after death. Something goes wrong, and your muscle cells, your fibers, get flooded with calcium. This isn't a metabolic thing. It's like the pouches that normally hold the reserves have rotted.
Well, it doesn't matter anymore. We're dead. Give it
Meanwhile,
up.
Meanwhile, you haven't been breathing, so the aerobic form of making adenosine triphosphate hasn't been working. But the anaerobic form has...
This is kind
of yes,
creepy.
I know. I mean, you're dead, and some of your cells are still doing stuff.
Oh, okay.
So now your myosin will end up attached to an actin, do all of the cycle, pull it tight, and then there's not enough ATP lying around to loosen it up again.
Oh.
You get stuck in a semi-permanent form of rigor, known as rigor mortis.
Yeah, okay. So that's where that comes
from. Yeah, and that's not going to go away until the myosin or the actin fibers degrade. This is a really peppy thing to talk about, especially around my birthday.
Happy birthday, man.
That was just a model of efficiency just now.
Did we ever figure out how it actually works?
It's funny you should ask that.
When I say we, did you?
You know, we haven't talked much about the membrane.
Oh, okay.
Lipid membranes are actually, for animal cells, it's a bilipid.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we're not going to talk that much about them now. Thing you need to know about them is that it will let water through.
No problem.
But larger molecules and ions,
okay,
they don't get through.
Denied.
Okay. Exactly. To get those things through, you usually have proteins that make little channels.
Hey.
Or even sort of active little pumps that will grab things and carry them around.
I always like the idea of ion pumps. Like the picture that pops in my head is very cartoony.
Yeah. What's the one? I didn't look this up because I didn't think I was going to mention it. That's what I get. It trades like 2 sodium for 3 potassium or vice versa. Mm. And there's a little wheel going wee, 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 wee.
Yeah. I like that thing.
And that little wheel is powered by ATP.
Oh, everything is.
But there's another little wheel, another little pump. Actually, I have no idea what the molecule looks like, which is when it cranks over, it makes ATP. It slaps those phosphates onto the end of an exhausted molecule.
Okay.
And turns it back into the triphosphate instead of the diphosphate or monophosphate it was. And the way that works, this is fun, right? Yeah. For us, there's a bunch of ways it works. But our favorite is to take some of our food. Glucose.
Hey, okay.
And snap it in half. That's just like step one. There's a whole lot of actually taking individual electrons and shuttling them from one molecule to another one.
Okay.
And each time is a slight step down in potential energy.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason we're doing this is because we're getting a nice big negative charge on one side of a membrane.
Okay.
In order to encourage hydrogen ions, which are basically just protons, to sit inside this little pouch.
Okay.
Now, the last thing that happens with this whole electron chain, and that's actually what they call it, is that it lands on an oxygen.
Okay.
Because oxygen likes electrons.
Plants a flag.
There are other elements that like electrons even more, like chlorine and fluorine, but they're not so abundant, right? So oxygen it is.
Okay.
Also, we're not used to something liking that many electrons and it can kill us. So,
also poison.
Anyway, we still got this pouch of protons.
Okay.
And they're all charged the same, so they really want to get out of there if they possibly can, but they can't. There's membranes.
We've got you.
The only way they can get out is by pushing this little pump.
Oh, okay.
It's not pumping them. It is being pumped by them.
What a neat little chemistry trick. Yay for machinery.
Yeah.
That's small.
That's as much detail as I'm going to get into or understand. But this whole oxygen thing, early life didn't have free oxygen available.
Right.
That didn't happen until later.
This is covered in some of your shows.
At least not abundant free oxygen.
Mm-hmm.
So it had to find somewhere else to put electrons to make all this sort of thing work.
Mm.
And in fact, we can do that too.
By ourselves?
We were talking about rigor mortis and muscles. Okay, well, there's a thing we got where if there is not enough oxygen for the amount of effort our muscles are making.
Yeah, okay.
We ferment glucose.
That's right.
Here's a super duper technical definition of fermentation for you.
Okay.
It's the breaking apart of organic molecules into simpler forms without an electron chain and using an organic molecule as a final electron acceptor.
That's what it is. Tune in next week. Oh, goodness. Yeah.
When we ferment glucose, we go down to lactic acid.
Yes.
That is it.
That's it.
Yes, there are other critters, bacteria especially, or yeast, who ferment things even further and end up with a molecule of ethanol and 2 of carbon dioxide.
So this is why we don't get drunk when we work out. Because we stop at lactic acid.
Unless something is really weird. Our gut bacteria, they can ferment. They can ferment like nobody's business. Oh. In fact, there's a condition, rare enough, but some people have the bacteria to where if they eat a lot of starches and they end up with glucose in their large intestines, they will, in fact, get drunk because the damn bacteria start making alcohol.
The ultimate cheap date. Here, have some bread.
You can't drive on bagels. It's just not. It seems like this might have been an earlier choice of what to eat and where to get your energy.
Okay.
So, now we move on to this DNA study that was done. Somebody was looking for the last common ancestor. And by that, he meant the last common ancestor of all life.
Ooh, a tall charge.
Yes, considering all that horizontal gene transfer, yes, it's a tricky business. Mm-hmm. And other people have done this and come up with different results, so.
You were talking about the beginnings of life and things kind of evolving next to each other?
Yeah, I really think last common ancestor was probably a population rather than one little bug.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense to me.
Anyway, what he found was a bunch of genes you would expect to find in critters living by hydrothermal vents. I'm not sure why the echo.
Okay. Serious business.
Now, these guys use something called chemosynthesis.
Okay. Chemical? Chemo?
Yes.
Okay.
That's exactly correct. In fact, they even can fix carbon from carbon dioxide and make glucose and other chemicals by using chemical energy. What they are doing is finding other things to accept their electrons.
Here, take it.
Like hydrogen sulfide, H2S, in case you're curious, okay. or metal that's around,
okay.
or minerals.
Oh, my fault. I kept thinking about us eating things. We don't eat metal, but we're not talking about humans anymore.
No,
I apologize.
Humans are far away and good at cooking. we invented bagels. I've totally lost my place. No, okay, I got it. This guy's theory, actually, is that due to the nature of hydrothermal vents, you've got these really superheated alkaline waters coming out into the vaguely acidic ocean waters.
Okay.
He thinks there was a proton imbalance already there.
Okay.
And that life started in that mess, probably even without membranes, using porous rock instead.
Oh, interesting.
And then eventually one critter or another learned how to make their own electron chains and proton pumps. Mm-hmm. And then they went wriggling off to conquer the Earth. The thing about this, though, is it suggests that there should be some critters who can give electrons up with just about anything.
Okay.
And there are. Oh, hey. In fact, there are bacteria that, given the choice, can feed on just free electrons.
Well, you can hook them up to power?
Absolutely.
You're kidding me.
Electric bacteria. There's a few species that have been found. Some of them have nanowires and will do things like move electrons from deep sediment where there is no oxygen out to less deep sediment where there is oxygen to accept the electrons. Some of them will dump the electrons onto rust. And, purify iron, right? Oh, okay. There's a lot of interest in these, actually, as a distributed power source for low power applications like your phone.
Calculator. Oh, phone, low power. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. There's also some interest in using them to clean up environmental spills. Because they will give electrons to long heart, to oil.
Okay,
yeah. And no other critter we know of does that. There's also uranium oxide, which is dissolvable in water. And that's a problem. You know, uranium's poisonous and radioactive. Yeah. They can I was getting all tangential. They can refine the uranium by throwing electrons at it. And it will precipitate out of the water. It makes it much easier to collect.
These are the handiest little suckers in the world.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of research going on. In fact, Washington State University went to Yellowstone National Park, found one of those hot springs, extra sulfury hot springs. And like, how are we going to find some of these electric bacteria? Well, they stuck a battery in the water.
They oh my goodness, okay.
I'm oversimplifying, but they pumped some current in, and they found that some bacteria migrated over to grab electrons from that little terminal and throw them back over at that one.
Here, have a buffet.
And there's a guy who's kept some bacteria alive, feeding them nothing but current for several months. And I'm actually, I'm a little curious about this, because like maybe you can keep them alive as far as their metabolism is ticking over, mm-hmm. but they're not going to be able to make a copy of themselves unless they have some actual matter to ingest.
Oh, yeah.
So is he just, I don't know. But there's videos, you can watch them. So once again, no answers.
And don't tune in next week.
That's right, no episode then. Anyway, eventually, some critters learn to eat sunlight, or use sunlight as an energy source. Yeah. And in fact, there has been a war.
Ooh.
Between a couple of different strains, each one of them trying to outpopulate and outpoison the other one.
Ooh, okay.
And the terrible thing is that the one which we can pretty much call the winner, the other guy still got a toehold, but the one we can call a winner never stopped producing this awful toxin.
Whoa, okay.
And it may have caused the longest and most severe ice age the Earth has ever known.
Wow. Okay.
But we'll talk about that next time. See you then.
Bye.